Hello, hello, hola, buenas. ¿Cómo están?
¿Cómo estás, amor?
Muy bien, ¿y tú, amor?
Nice to see you.
It is the Chancleta Generation Podcast. Yeah. I know, I was working out this morning and I was doing this thing. No, I'm stuck with it. Okay. Buenas, buenas. I am Clemencia and I own this agency called Moira Studio. And we advertise to Latinos in a very authentic and caring way.
And I'm Cecilia Del Cid, environmental and social justice practitioner, an American immigrant from Guatemala, also working in media. And your co-host over here with Chacleteando con Clemencia.
La más bonita.
La más guapa.
Yay.
Amor, what are we going to talk about today?
So happy to be back today. We're going to talk about something that, once again, I'm here just, you know, talk about all these personal topics. But I guess, you know, it's good because maybe, you know, hopefully it resonates with somebody out there and maybe help somebody. So if that's, you know, worth the self-introspection, then so be it.
I think it's a very important topic. It's a very important topic. Yeah. And I appreciate that you're bringing it forward.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, reading up, and Latinos are starting businesses at a record rate. And we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics later. But one of the things is that, you know, we are also finding a lot of challenges along the way. Mm-hmm. As an entrepreneur and business owner myself, I can speak to some of them, and I will. And like I said, hopefully it resonates with somebody and it may help somebody that may be thinking of starting a business, or somebody that's already, you know, on their way, in entrepreneurship, and maybe they just don't feel alone in all this, you know, crazy ride that, is owning your own business. So,
yeah, it's wonderful. I am. Also, you know, I think I never think of myself as a business owner, but I work in a worker-owned co-op. That's where I do the rest of my time, and which means that everyone that I work with is a co-owner of the business, and I start as a staff, but then we have a process to apply to become a member owner. So there is something that is a different path to business ownership. And it's small, usually, you know, it's a different approach to becoming an entrepreneur.
And I feel like it's a little bit more difficult when you have multiple owners. You know, you have to, everybody has to agree on things, and, you know, don't you find it?
I think it's actually quite... I don't think I would have had the interest of doing it on my own. I also don't think I think a lot of people approach entrepreneurship. I'm better at co-creating than I think that is what works for me. So like the horizontal and more democratic approach, and also the whatever we create belongs to all of us, which really aligns with my values. So I do think that it has challenges. There is that composition of agreement, but that is why you have kind of very, very clear procedures, and we have involved. And every time someone applies for ownership, you know, it's like if you have mac and cheese, and you have cheese and macaroni, and you mix them, and that's your dish. But if then you put like lobster or breadcrumbs, like that's a different dish, right? So like,
it has some
of the basic ingredients, but as every time you add a new ingredient, you produce a different dish.
Yeah,
you know. So at that moment, you have to once again get to the, you have core foundational bylaws that rule your mm-hmm. workplace. And mm-hmm. of course, then you have to invite the persons, the new applicants or the mm-hmm. new members, to have a space to like reshape it. Mm-hmm. And so that is probably a little more intensive than if you say like, this is what I have, this is my team, this is my strategy, and you can pick yeah. or not pick. People can leave the co-op at the same times. Like anyone could like resign a job, could adjust it. We have had people who have reduced their times for family needs, reduced their time for education, starting a new degree. Other people yeah. who have other multiple jobs, but it has definitely a sense of like whatever we create, we all benefit from, and whenever the challenges are, we share the burden together.
That's cool. I'm not familiar at all with the concept of the co-op, so that's really interesting to hear. I just like, to me, you know, co-ownership feels almost like a condo association.
It's a little like that.
And you're like, hey, we should, do some landscaping in this terrible patio. And people are like, meh, 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 meh.
And, you know, and it's a little like that. Like, here there is condos, but for example, New York City, I know a friend who just bought an apartment in a co-op, in a co-op building that if you, and she had to apply to the mortgage, and she also had to apply to the cooperative. You know, she had to make an application why she wanted to live in a co-owned, you know, a cooperative housing. And there are cooperative housings here in Boston are some of the most are some of the strategies to prevent gentrification.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool. See, yeah, yeah, there's all these things that you know that I don't know.
You know, so like, but you're saying a condo association is a little like that. Like, the smaller your condo association, the easier it is to come to agreement. In a business, I think there are big cooperatives, like our big ones. And in the mm-hmm. United States, there's a tradition. But I think mainly you end up having also like a board of directors, which if you grow beyond, if you have five people and you need to have like a chair, a secretary, like that, everyone is in the board of directors. But if you have 30 people need to vote, so you always have to have structures, and there is organizations in the United States that help you think through all of that.
And this is why we're doing this, because I've been owning a business for almost 10 years. I have no clue about any of these things, and you know, this is some of the things that we're gonna talk about. You know,
absolutely.
Lack of information is a huge issue when it comes to people of color, women, you know, minorities trying to do anything, basically.
Yes.
But, you know, in specific, starting a business, which is such a complex thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I want to hear a little bit about what motivated you. What is it though? One day did you wake up and say like, this is it today? Like, you had a job at some point, you're working in it. Like, tell us a little bit about your journey. Tell me your journey a little bit. Like, you and I have talked a little bit about this, but you've never really shared with me.
Yeah.
What was that moment when you were like, this is what I want to do. I don't know how to get from point A to point M. I wouldn't know how to get from point A to point B. But I'm saying, like, I know you are a lot more of, like, I'm going to make an assumption about you. No, like, an educated guess, because I know you a little bit, a lot.
Yeah.
You are much more organized, and you probably went and thought, like, like, tell me a little bit. I want to hear it. I want to hear what happened.
Okay. All right. So, I think it all started long time ago. So I had a job, and I've had jobs, but throughout me having jobs, for me to make more money, because the job market when I started working was, I mean, it was good, but it was paying crap, you know. So I was like barely making it every month. It was kind of like, do I put gas in the car? Do I have some money to eat? You know, it was kind of like that. So I started freelancing to sort of make ends meet. So it was like, you know, I would go to work, I would come back home like around 6 and then just freelance till like 2 a.m. And then that started to be very profitable because freelancing just pays so much more than you know, full-time employment. But obviously it's like, it's hard because, you know, you take on all the risk and you have to go out and get clients. And so thankfully I had some good contacts, and, you know, they kept like giving me work. And so I started saying like, you know, this kind of interesting for me to like choose the work that I want to do. I get to do something really interesting. It's not just like sort of like always just working for the same client, or for the same, you know, brand or whatever. And so with time I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. So I kept freelancing, you know, as time went on, I still had some jobs. But there was a moment in which, you know, I was already like, you know, getting into my 30s, and I was like, I can't, you know, work until 2, 3 a.m. every day while I'm holding this job. So I decided to, you know, just freelance full time. And, you know, I still, like, there were some moments it was like, oh, okay, well, while I, you know, move or what I do this, like I will freelance and then I will look for work. And then so it was kind of on and off, but I really liked always just to, you know, meet new people, work on different projects. It was really exciting to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm a person that gets bored very easily, so to me employment was kind of like, it wasn't a good fit for me. It was just like, I'm getting bored with what I'm doing all the time. And so I freelanced for about 10 years. And then I also work at ad agencies, you know, on a freelance basis. And so I really like the advertising part of it. And so I kind of like tried, you know, to work with many different organizations. Mm-hmm. And then you know, I got some clients that, you know, have been like, you know, pretty regular, and then they started like wanting more things out of me, and they were like, well, can you do this? I was like, I can't, but I can find somebody that can do it. And so then I like hired the first person. And so I was like, okay, I guess if I'm hiring people, I'm paying them, like, I guess I have to incorporate. So it was kind of born out of, okay, well, if I want to, you know, give more services to the clients and make more money, then I guess I have to incorporate. So it was very like organic. It was organic, but it's also, it, you know, it had been implanted in my mind for many years. Like, I would love to have my own thing. And there was another really important aspect of it, which is, you know, many years ago, we were working with like a Latino focused campaign, and, you know, somebody was like, can you translate the script? And I was like, I don't, that's, you're not supposed to translate the script. You're supposed to write the script accordingly to, you know, the needs of the, mm-hmm. of the audience. So I can't really translate. I was like, this is against like what, everything that I believe in. And so, but it was really hard to sort of like change it as a freelancer and as, you know, somebody that's within the system. So I was like, well, if I really want to make an impact and I really want to, do things my way, which is like, you know, the way that I think that should be done, and but nobody's listening to me as a freelancer because I'm just like this person that you're paying for, you know, to do exactly what you want them to do. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, well, if I really want to do my own thing and do something very different, then I have to just start my own thing. So it was born out of like, hey, I'm bored. I want to do a bunch of things, but also I like to do them in a certain way and nobody's listening to me. So here we go.
Mm-hmm. You wanted your work to be more aligned with your values.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to exactly. allow you creative outlet or express, if you had to like do the work and you wanted to have flexibility and create, you know, and be able to choose the projects that you wanted to work with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I did not start it because I wanted to be flexible with my hours, because God knows that that does not compute. I've worked many, many, many times over when I had a job. Many, many more hours. Many more. But it's been an amazing journey. I've learned so much. I've learned to wear so many different hats at this point. But also, like, in a way, my restless brain has been, you know, put at ease. Like, it's challenged all the time. So I'm like, okay, well, here we go. Here we go with this other thing. So it's like, you know, it really is a good fit for me. I like it because it's something different every time. And getting out of my comfort zone all the time has really, you know, been very exciting. So.
Okay. And how, you know, we have had some conversations in the new podcast about money and finances. And we've talked about Latina's relationship with money. How was that process for you figuring out, like, obviously I will say this again, I believe that work is a scam. Like, work is like, you know, we're addicted to having a safe home and food, right? So like, we go to work, we have bills to pay, and there's risks about like, there's like, you know, there is when you have like a lot of people. I remember when I was in Guatemala, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, I don't, when you leave or are in a place where there is not a lot of job opportunities, you would stick for many, many years to a job that might not give you intellectually or emotionally what you need, but that helps you keep your basic needs covered. And that, I mean, there is no judgment in that. Like, you know, like, that is a very valid reason to be in a job for many, many years. And
yeah, and our parents would tell us, like, hey, you know, you have to have job security, you have to have your paycheck. I mean, my parents were kind of horrified when I was telling them that I was freelancing full time. They were just like, but what about the paycheck?
Yeah.
and you know, it's kind of funny because like a lot of millennials are like, oh, we started this whole thing. It's like, yeah, you know, I think the Gen X people, you know, they started the whole freelancing. Well, I don't think we started it, but we were already doing it, you know, and now it's just been normalized. But, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. So, you know, you know, the whole freelance, like the gig economy, you know, has been going on for a long time. And the digital nomad thing also, like, I was living in Europe, well, you know, when I met my husband, and I was working for the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like the digital nomad thing. And this was in the, you know, the early 2000s. So, you know, it's a thing that has been going on for a while, but it took a lot of like mental strength to actually do it, because, like, you know, back then it wasn't really common. Like, you know, people just had this job and they stayed at their job and they had this job security thing and blah blah, and their families were horrified if they were not, they were gonna leave this job security. So it takes, you know, now it's very normalized and it's great and like everybody's doing it, but it was not easy for me. It was terrifying. And also it's like, okay, well, I just finished this project, like, let's see when the other project is gonna come in, and in the meantime I have some money to, you know, pay the bills, but like, where's the next one? It's kind of like you're going in this ups and down, like, oh yay, I just made all this money, and then, oh, how long is it gonna last? So it's stressful.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking about, I feel like, I would say in Latin America, which is where I grew up, a lot of people have informal jobs. Like, they don't have a job. They work for themselves. Women in particular, sometimes, like, will clean houses, cook food, sell things. Like, there is a lot of informal economy. People might even have a full-time job and then still sell jewelry, do other things on the side to supplement their income. So, like, I think that it's even not just... I think it's been maybe more because we have technology, because we have phones and internet, and, you know, we didn't grow up with any of that. I think it's always been happening. I think when I was mentioning, for example, a lot of my background is in, like, natural resource management, and in another life, I remember, you know, farmers in Latin America, especially if you're a small farmer, you will never be able to, like, do your production or collection on your own. So there is this culture of, like,
it requires so much money to start something like that.
But, like,
I mean, in the service industry that I do, like, okay, I just need a computer and my own skills. But, you know, when you have an industry, you need inventory, you need equipment, you need land. It's a big investment, initial investment. So I doubt, you know, it's really hard to come up with an initial investment.
But that's what I was going to say, that it's usually done cooperatively. In Latin America, when there is something called mingas or juntas. So when someone has a plot of land, a small, when it's time to plant, we will do whatever, we will do one. My neighbor will come and do mine, and then we all will go do theirs, and then, like, and we're not workers, we're cooperating. And when you have to harvest, you do the same thing. You will make a big meal, you will, like, offer people, like, you know, food, whatever, and it becomes a collective activity in which families and community members, because we know that we don't have the resources to pay laborers. So especially for small owners or small, you know, landowners, it has to happen in collaboration and in community. So I think that that's what a lot of our, for me, for example, thinking of, like, that, and it might, you know, it might be in different industries, because your industry is much more about, like, you know, like, visual design or political design. It's a different one, right? It operates in a different scale. You're like, I need a computer. But you not only need a computer, you need skills, and you also need, like, to be able to do the work of, like, creating a campaign. It's not the same work of keeping your accounting. It's not the same skills that you need of marketing and selling. Like, you might have, as a freelancer, be like, I am a great graphic designer, you know, and then you're like, and how do I go out there and find clients? So those are very different skills. And if you have a team, if you work for an agency, someone is out there bringing clients in, they are not doing graphic design, and someone is out there doing HR and payroll. No.
Yeah, I mean, that all sounds awesome, but it's just like, I mean, here, when I started my business almost 10 years ago, that was unheard of. And also, like, where am I going to find people that would be interested in going in this with me?
No. I was saying, not like thinking of a co-op, but, like, I'm just saying you had to learn a lot of other skills. That's kind of what I was trying to say.
Yeah,
like, you...
Yeah.
That
so many
you
hats.
Had to diversify your own skills so much.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing my own books for years. I mean, thankfully, my husband has some financial Excel skills.
Excel.
I was like, can you put this Excel together for me? But yeah, I was doing my own books, and I was, you know, I was doing the accounting and the invoicing and the project management and the sales and the marketing and the social media, and, like, it's a lot.
That's what
so
I was
you
trying
you
to
just
use.
End up working around the clock.
how?
But
how
yeah, I mean, like the you know, as a business owner, there's like mm-hmm. there's so many barriers of entry. Like I feel like there's so many people that have great ideas, and or and also like you know the personality. Like I believe that like it truly takes like a certain personality to like endure this. I call it endure because it is you're enduring, you know, entrepreneurship. It's a lot, and you know, so it's like, you know, people have the personality and they have the ideas and they have the will, but it's like, you know, finding resources, finding education, and finding support is really hard, and especially if you're a woman of color. If you're a Latina who already, you know, is in the lowest level of, you know, income mm-hmm. in the country, if you have a job, how are you going to gather up enough money to start your own business?
And I think that that's kind of what I was trying to say. Like, you know, you had to learn a lot of other skills as you know, you started freelancing, and that probably is, you know, you started smaller and slowly built. But I think what I admire is like, how do we, you know, what are some of the takeaways of like, how do we provide, you know, like health insurance? I know there is a lot of barriers, even for just a small business in the United mm-hmm. States, because so mm-hmm. like that's a big expense, because I think of like how many of us also don't leave a job because our health insurance is tied or provided through that job. And if you go and do it on your own, like that is one of the big expenses that small business owners or, you know, or even co-ops have to like front. Like that's one of the biggest expenses of the business, providing health insurance for your members or your employees. And sometimes
I mean, I have a friend who has her own business and she doesn't have health insurance because she can't afford it. Or I mean, it would be sort of like, okay, I pay health insurance or I mean she does have she has inventory, so it's like I either buy what I need for the materials or I pay for health insurance. And you know, I'm always scared for her because it's, you know, it's scary to not have health insurance. But it is a hard decision for women, you know, and women of color to do that. And so that's a huge barrier of entry. I'm not going to have health insurance. I'm not going to have benefits. I'm not going to have a retirement plan. I've already mentioned this before. Yes. Mm-hmm. I've never had a retirement plan, like an IRA or like a retirement 401k. Fund or anything like that. Because like, you know, whatever money that you make, you're putting it back into the business to try to, you know, make it grow, or it goes into your employees or whatever. So, you know, saving up for retirement is hard. I mean, you're just like hoping that, you know, things get, you know, really better, and like the business really takes off. So then you can be like, oh, okay, so now I can save for retirement. So there's a lot of risk that you're taking on from the get go. And, you know, funding is so important, not just like to buy equipment and things like that, but also so you can be okay. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, one of the first things that I started this like entrepreneur courses because I was like, God knows, I don't know anything.
So you started to train yourself.
What I'm doing. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And one of the first things that they said was like, raise your hand if you're paying yourself. You know, it's like such a, and many people were like looking at each other like, how are we supposed to pay? Like at the beginning, you know, and this is like something that even my, you know, it's like written in economy books. Like, I mean, the first year, you know, usually companies give losses because you have so much investment up front. So it's like, you're not paying yourself. I mean, thankfully I had a very supportive husband, and you know, we were living off of, you know, part of my savings and his salary, and I had savings that I invested into the company. But not everybody has that. And paying yourself is so important. But, you know, you got to pay, you know, people that work for you, and you got to pay, maybe people need to pay an office, or maybe they need to pay materials, or they maybe need to pay for their car or gas or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, there's a chunk of money you're making, and it goes into like all these other things, and then you're left with this much, and then, you know, it goes back into the business. And so what do I, you know, so getting started is hard. So, you know, funding, again, like I said, is important, not just to like afford things for the business, but also so you can be okay. You know, you can pay yourself, you can pay your rent, you can, you know, have health insurance, you know, it's, and you know, it so I know that, you know, this may sound to some people like, well, then why are you starting a business? You know, if it sounds so hard, but it's like, if you really have an idea and you really think that, and you really believe in it, and you think that this could work, you go for it. But also, you know, in the other side of things, small businesses are what drive the economy, mm-hmm. in every single country. And so, you know, it should be, and don't get me wrong, it's very easy to start a business here in the U.S. Legally, it is. You just like incorporate, you pay some money to the state, done. That's it. In Europe, it's way more complicated, and you have to start paying to the government immediately, like a monthly fee to own the business, which makes it really, really hard. Because if you don't have any funding and you already have to pay the government, it's like, you know. Mm-hmm. So in the U.S., you know, illegally is very easy. But I think that there, you know, and then, you know, as I've gone, you know, in time, I've learned that there's more resources that the government has, you know, for funding. But I didn't know any of that stuff. And all of that is not super out there. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I really kind of wish that, like, whenever I went in and I incorporated my business, that they would have handed me, like, a little packet and be like, hey, here are all these things for you, you know, that now that you're starting a business. And it really wasn't the case. I was just like, okay, well, here's your freaking receipt, good luck. And so I feel like, you know, if the government really thinks that, it doesn't think, it is a fact that small businesses move the economy, then you gotta help them along a little bit more.
I think in the United States, obviously, because everything, you have like that level of like federal and then versus the state, I think that there is this idea, like in Massachusetts, where I live, and I've seen some like trainings and some workshops, and I wonder how it is in other parts of the United States. And I was saying also for co-ops, there's like one in particular that is the United States Federation of Worker Cooperatives. So like there's big kind of like national organizations that provide some of those resources, like, you know, in Spanish and English, or like, you know, how do we, in other languages. But like, what are some of the things, Glenn, that you wish you knew? Did you find any resources for like funding? Did you find softwares that helped you navigate it better? Was it mentorship from other women? What were some of the things? Like, I'm just hoping, you know, like there's some hilarious. In there.
You're hilarious. Mentorship. And once again, we went over the time. So we are cutting this episode at this time. And it will become part one. And we'll be back next week with part two, in which we're going to talk more about our entrepreneur journey and actually some tips on where to get resources. So we will see you next week for part two.
Nos vemos la otra semana. See you next week.